Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 14, 2021. A veteran South Sudanese politician is asking civil society and faith-based groups to pull out of the South Sudan peace agreement.
Constitutional court has not been established, so totally judicially has been neglected. When it comes to the state and local government, they have also done it partially.
And the South Sudanese analyst says the parties that signed the 2018 South Sudan peace agreement have done very little to implement the matrix in the deal.
Civil society and even some of the political parties who are not directly linked to the war, there was no point for them to have been involved. But you know, it's because the IGAD designed it in such a way that it is for power.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese political analyst says 10% of the tasks in the implementation matrix of the South Sudan peace agreement has been implemented as the country marks the 3-year anniversary of the agreement. James O'Cook says leaders of the groups that signed the peace deal should focus on key activities that are vital for elections. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
James O'Cook is a senior research fellow and political analyst at the Juba-based Center for Strategic Policy Studies. He says the revitalized peace agreement has 186 activities, starting from the pre-transitional period to the transitional period. O'Cook says the vast majority of the activities spelled out in the agreement have not been completed. O'Cook says the vast majority of the activities spelled out in the agreement have not been completed, commissions have not been reconstituted, and political parties have not finished nominating their legislators, and he says the creation of institutions have not been carried out.
Constitutional court has not been established, so totally judicially has been neglected. When it comes to the state and local government, they have also done it partially, and the governors have been appointed, the ministers, advisors, and the commissioners of the counties, but they have not touched the legislative assemblies of those states and even the councils of the county. So a lot remain to be desired as far as the government at the subnational levels are concerned.
O'Cook says Chapter 4, which deals with the economy and public service reforms as well as capacity building, is yet to be implemented. He says work on the permanent constitution-making process has started, but the timeline in the agreement has not been respected. Of the 186 activities, O'Cook says only a fraction have been implemented.
Below 10% has been completed so far, and the rest are still pending. And the way forward is to speed up the main activities that can account for the implementation or for a meaningful implementation of the revitalized peace agreement, and leave out the rest of activities that are not very significant anymore and whose timelines have become irrelevant and superfluous up to now. So it's for the parties to sit down, build a consensus, and identify the key areas that they need to intensify their activities on.
He says successful implementation of the chapter on security arrangements could change the situation in South Sudan.
If the unification of the forces has not succeeded so far, the trust that peace has come back to the country will not come back. And people will always have doubt whether the parties are serious or not, especially when there are ambushes on the roads and when there is insecurity across the country and when there are all-out groups who have not signed this agreement. If the security arrangement does not move faster, then this becomes a bigger concern to cessation of hostilities.
Edmund Yakani, Executive Director for the Community Empowerment for Progress organization, says the entire implementation process has been very slow because the parties lack the genuine will needed to implement the agreement. He says the leaders of the various groups that signed the agreement should be thinking about extending the transitional period.
We can't go for elections without unified armed forces. Going for elections without delivering the reforms proposed in the agreement, it is a return to violence in this country. It will be better for them to extend, but not an extension for the sake of enjoying power. It's an extension for the sake of delivering tasks and to empower the citizens to decide on the nature of the next leaders and the leadership that they want in the country.
Yakani claims some governors and their deputies have what he calls political friction. He says the parties to the agreement must work together to ensure the agreement is fully implemented. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Still on the South Sudan peace agreement, a veteran South Sudanese politician says bad working relationship between President Salva Kiir and former rebel leader Riek Machar is the main reason for the slow implementation of the 2018 peace agreement. Peter Aduok Nyaba says the various groups that signed the 2018 peace deal are now part of the government, leaving no room for checks and balance. He says the civil society and faith-based groups should pull out of the agreement.
Civil society and even some of the political parties who are not directly linked to the war, there was no point for them to have been involved. But, you know, it's because the IGAD designed it in such a way that it is for power, power sharing and responsibility sharing, which is it doesn't solve anything. It actually makes it more complicated. You see, when you leave the real fundamental issues and go to the issue of power, then definitely it complicated it. And this is where we are now. It becomes impossible to implement. Because if you look at it, you go back a little from 2018, you go back to 2016 when the ARCIS collapsed. It was because Salva, first of all, said that this the ARCIS was imposed, and actually it was imposed by the mediators. You see, it was not something which people have agreed. They imposed it, you take it or leave it.
Let us look at the scorecard since the agreement was signed on the 12th of September 2018. What has been achieved and what are the challenges?
No, what has happened is that, okay, they formed the government. And what remained, which they should have done, which is very, very important, was the security arrangements. It's because precisely President Salva thinks that any change in the balance of forces works against him. And that's why he's right. I mean, he did not implement anything because he says that, okay, these people have defeated them. Why give them all this kind of thing? These powers, for instance, you see. So if you look at it from that point of view, Salva had a point. And in fact, some of us, even when we were there, that, okay, we wanted to remove him. We didn't remove him. He put a condition that he didn't want Riek. Riek can bring anybody. He could have brought Oduor, his deputy. He could have brought anybody, even including his wife, and let him remain out. You see, now he insists that he should be there. And he was vice president of Salva for 8.5 years. So we try to tell him, okay, for the sake of peace, then you step aside, give it to somebody. Because if they are there, they are not going to do anything. They will be quarreling, you see, undermining each other. They have long history of quarrel, of undermining each other, even during the 20 years war.
Some supporters of the transitional government of national unity who are listening to me and you will say you are very critical because you are not in the government. How do you react to that?
No. I'm talking like that because I left the IO. I'm not part of IO because they refused to listen to what I was saying. So I left it to them, let them go on and let us see how it will work out. Now they are part of the government. I'm not in the government and I don't want to be in the government because I don't think that is the way I would contribute really to resolving the problems. I look at it completely differently.
You say the pledges in the matrix of the 2018 peace agreement have not been implemented. What is the way forward?
It is deliberate. Of course, deliberate. You need to go back to the drawing board. If you want Salva to go, then you have to apply a different method. Okay? Either you work with him and really you have to listen to what he's saying. There's no any other way.
There's going to be elections at the end of the transitional period. Looks like this is a golden opportunity for those who want change. What is your take?
Yeah, but you think that you can do elections in South Sudan under the conditions we are in now? You need another 10 years actually to prepare for credible, fair and transparent elections. If you do it under these conditions, it will be again rekindling the crisis and people go to war because there will be disputes over election results, the rigging and so on. These guys went to Rome, to the Vatican, and their feet were kissed by the Pope. The Pope kissed them, begging them virtually to that you people should really be concerned about your people. But they have not done that. For the civil society group, Rajab, yes. Yeah, I agree with him. He should. There's no point of being in that RGMAC if they are not able to do anything. It's a good step he has done. Yes, by resigning.
Your neighbors, that is Kenyans and Ugandans, think South Sudanese are just warmongers or power hungry. How can you convince me that you are not power hungry?
No, John, I don't think all of them are warmongers. I mean, I've never aspired to leadership, not even of the party, leave the one of the country. The thing is that many of our people who are now, they call themselves political leaders, are not really politicians. These are people who have just one agenda of being in government, being in power, and collecting wealth. They have nothing to do with the problems of the people of South Sudan. But what is happening in Juba is that they don't care. People, the way people are living, the way the market is operating, no, nobody cares about that, you see. And none of them has even come up with a statement. You see, those who call themselves opposition, they are not. There is actually virtually no opposition in Juba. Everybody has been absorbed into the system, you see. So they care about their own neck and mouths and stomach only, that's all.
What is the danger of having a system of governance that has no checks and balance?
You know, we have been talking and writing, and nobody's listening. Because this is exactly what we're saying, that this must be corrected. First of all, I've been talking of that people should engage in constructive dialogue. You see, those in the government, the incumbent government, and those who have come from outside, the so-called opposition, they are really not opposition. And also the FDs, the former detainees, for instance. You see, people should be, because this is our country, we should engage in constructive dialogue.
The people who are affected right now in South Sudan as a result of the slow implementation of the peace agreement are civilians, if you like, or people in the rural areas. What should the people of South Sudan do differently to produce different results?
Yeah, what I said, you see, and what I believe in is that, of course, the situation has not come to the point where life and death become almost equal. As soon as we reach there, the people will know what they will do. You see, they will not even care about their leaders.
That's Peter Aduok Nyaba, a veteran South Sudanese politician. He was speaking to me via a messaging app from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Research shows that African continent has the highest number of women entrepreneurs in the world. However, development experts warn that even though there has been considerable progress in the last decade as conditions improve and more women entrepreneurs enter the marketplace. A combination of socioeconomic factors still hinder their advancement. Amit Dhar, an economist with the World Bank, says that countries need to address some of the persistent gender gaps and inequalities that contribute to women earning lower profits than men.
It becomes even more important in COVID times because the COVID crisis is hitting women particularly hard because a lot of them were sort of these informal sector traders at the margins, and they are hit even harder because their small businesses are gone now or closed. So we really need to just make sure that we redouble our efforts on women and girls. And I know it's not going to be easy given countries have less resources right now. But at the same time, there's a lot that needs to be done and can be done. And putting money in this area is going to reap huge dividends in the future.
Right. And you say there's a lot that can be done.
Yes.
Be done. So what are some of the barriers that impede women's participation in business or in economic development? Are they mainly social? Are they mainly cultural? Some of them even codified into law in some societies.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a combination of all of these things. So, which is basically some laws, for example, which prevent pregnant girls from going to school. You need to put in laws which provide stronger legal protection against gender-based violence for women and children. So those are some of the things that really do need to sort of are barriers in some sense, which impact or go against stronger women and children and girls participation in schooling, in the labor market, and so which inhibit women from doing or reaching up to their full potential.
Okay, now
I think that those are the types of things we should be working on,
as well.
As investing in education and health opportunities which allow girls to go to school. And we've seen numerous examples from around the world that when those opportunities are open and available, girls do fantastically. The economy does very well.
Right.
So those are the types of things we need to do. Sorry.
Right. And you're right. Many studies have shown that some of the ways to empower women or girls is through education. However, we've seen around the continent, whether it's in sub-Saharan Africa or other parts of the developing world, that in many there are these persistent cultural attitudes that continue to impede girls' education. How does that change in the next 20 years as we are pursuing the sustainable development goals?
Excellent question, and not an easy answer, but I think it's a combination of several things. One is sort of a lot of communication around the importance of investing in girls, in girls' education, investing in women, and showing that this reaps significant benefits for society and for the economy. That's number one, I think. Number two is to actually get the community leaders and community elders very much involved. It can be a message from the top, of course, which will be very important, but you really need the communities to actually buy into this message and to sort of getting them involved. Once you have your community leader saying that, yes, I need to make sure that girls in this village are going to school, it changes the whole dynamic.
That's World Bank economist Amit Dhar speaking with my colleague Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, there is good news for people in South Sudan. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at some good news for people in South Sudan. South Sudan has received the first batch of COVID-19 Johnson & Johnson vaccines. The shipment of the 152,950 doses was donated by the U.S. government through the COVAX facility. South Sudan's Minister of Health says the arrival of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine puts the country on the right path to the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
South Sudan Minister of Health Elizabeth Achuay says the Johnson & Johnson vaccines will be available at vaccination centers by the end of the month. Achuay is encouraging young people to get the shot, adding young people are at risk of getting the Delta variant.
You take your time and come forward and take it. It is safe. So for the lay people over there, don't listen outside. Come to us. If you are not too sure what to do, our place is always open 24/7 because we are here for the safety of yours. And therefore, instead for you to go and gamble for information out there, there is a right here for you to be helped.
The minister says healthy professionals should guard against the people who are taking different brands of vaccines. South Sudan has two vaccines available, Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca. Dr. Victoria Anip is the undersecretary at the South Sudan Ministry of Health. Dr. Anip says the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be distributed at vaccination centers across the country.
The Johnson & Johnson is safe and efficient. It's only one shot and it's easy to take. It doesn't require a second shot like AstraZeneca. And we're going to do a bit of training. By the next 2 weeks to come, we'll be finished with the consignment of Johnson & Johnson.
This is the first time South Sudan is offering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to its population in the backdrop of reports of vaccine hesitancy in the country. Dr. Anip says many South Sudanese are getting vaccinated against the coronavirus. She says there is a high demand for getting the shot, and the Ministry of Health is looking at ways to make sure there is enough vaccines at vaccination centers across the country.
We have a population of approximately 13 million, and we're getting donations of vaccines. And vaccinating everybody is not an easy process. It requires a lot of resource mobilization and a lot of partnership and collaboration with our development partners.
According to the World Health Organization, the number of people vaccinated against the COVID-19 in South Sudan is among the lowest in the world. The WHO country representative in South Sudan, Dr. Fabian Denzako, says only 2% of the people in South Sudan have been vaccinated. He says the arrival of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and future COVAX facility donations could help the country meet the global target of ensuring 70% of its population is vaccinated by the middle of next year. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine will expire next year in February. The U.S. Church of Affairs in South Sudan, David Renz, says the donation of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to South Sudan is part of U.S. efforts to combat the COVID-19 pandemic globally.
Today is an important day for South Sudan's response to COVID-19 and for the partnership between the governments of the United States and South Sudan. The donation by the United States of over 150,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine through the COVAX initiative is part of the U.S. effort to combat COVID-19, promote health, and advance global health security. The United States has already donated more than 125 million doses from its domestic supply to over 80 countries. We will continue to share vaccine doses as supply becomes available.
Renz says the United States will donate 500 million Pfizer vaccine doses for distribution to more countries around the world by 2022. According to latest data released yesterday, 13 people in South Sudan were confirmed to have the COVID-19 virus on Monday. The cumulative number of cases since the virus arrived in the country last year is 11,693, including 120 deaths. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on COVID issues, early in the COVID pandemic, Benin set up a service to allow people to register their businesses online. The e-registration system has worked so well that this West African country is now the world's fastest place to start a business. That's according to UN agency. Muki Edwin Kinzika narrates this report by Anne Zwaki in Cotonou, Benin.
Sandra Edusu is the owner of a store selling art in Cotonou, Benin. She submitted her business application online and received approval and legal documents within 3 hours. She says if there was not this facility to create a business online, if one had to go stand in line, wait in line, go through the maze of administration to start a business, she wouldn't have done it. It's as simple as that, she says. She would have stayed in the informal sector. To create her business, Sandra went online to monentrepise.bg, a platform in Benin, to create and formally start a business. The site was launched in February 2020 by the country's Investment and Export Promotion Agency. It was the start of the pandemic, and the agency did not want people to come into their offices. Applicants fill out the required information, download the required documents, and make a payment online. The documents arrive at the agency's headquarters, where staff verify the information and mail business certificates to those who are approved. Laurent Gambis, the general manager of the Investment and Export Promotion Agency, says in 2019, the agency was at 28,000 businesses created. And in 2020, the figure went to over 41,000 businesses created. He adds, for him, this has been a good performance. It shows to the agency that the platform has been accepted and today it processes an application in 3 hours. The online service helped make Benin the fastest place in the world to start a company, according to the UN Conference on Trade and Development. The businesses must be located in Benin. However, people abroad can use the service if they are in the process of setting up a business inside the country. Economists like Albert Holunku see big benefits for entrepreneurs. He says the online service reduces costs, it reduces delays, and it avoids corruption. It also avoids carrying papers around. And in the COVID period, it avoids contacts and also avoids the lengthening of delays. The Investment and Export Promotion Agency says it will continue to review the procedures and dialogue with the private sector to further improve the process. For Anne Zwanke in Cotonou, Benin, Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Binia Juba by Mawa.
Reaching out to the brokenhearted, I'm reaching out to the lost souls, I'm reaching out to the absent-minded, I'm reaching out to the sick and the low. I'm reaching out to the brokenhearted, I'm reaching out to the lost souls, I'm reaching out to the absent-minded, I'm reaching out to the sick and the low. And I be me do it at I be you with a kanita waga. Ana biguna guna tai, bijibu fara, kangel fawaja. Ana maderi tageni barao, ae, ana bija. Ana maderi tageni feki, walele, ana bija.
We've been listening to Mawa and the song Binia Juba. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
To the stumbles and to the falls, I will always be there for you, by your side, day and night, and I ain't never gonna let you go. When the night's getting dark and cold, when you're all by yourself at home, Kelita.